Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Have our good friend Darren Dreger from TSN coming up on 100% Hockey with, there's John and Darren Millard. You know Dreger for a long time, came in and just exploded. Insider, he's got his hands in everything. He's one of those guys that plays it pretty honestly as far as what he's going to report. So I'm curious on a couple of things that we're going to chat about, not just the Stanley Cup final, but some
works
other
hard. Happenings. Listen, it's not a fun job at times. Works hard. His phone's always available. You know, when you whatever sport you're in, whether you're talking the NBA or the NFL or the NHL, those insiders, they're 24/7 guys. They get lots of stories. So he does a good job.
And he came up through the ranks as a hockey guy, like a play-by-play guy, as a host. Everything. I don't think the intention was to ever be an insider, and
what happened if you recall during the work stoppage in 2004 where we lost the whole season, where you were working at Sportsnet and TSN were in a news war and the competition of who would get the scoops and who would do this and do that, and Darren did an outstanding job at Sportsnet of getting information. And usually what happens, and this is the history of work stoppages in the NHL, there's a couple of guys that seem to find a way to get information and their career explodes after that. Mm-hmm. And Darren was one of those guys. It was, at that point, it was Darren Dreger versus Bob McKenzie in so many ways. Nick was still, trying to learn the ropes of how to do that kind of thing. But it was McKenzie versus Dreger. And then after the season was lost, TSN decided to expand that whole thing and then went after Dreger. And that's how he became the second insider at TSN.
I got a text from him saying, can you talk? I'm like, yeah, I was on the golf course. And phoned him. He's like, I'm leaving. I'm going to sport, TSN. I'm like, what? Which actually worked out okay for all of us.
He's done great things.
The Stanley Cup final, I'm surprised how many people are critical of the Edmonton Oilers' chances of winning this series, given what they did last year, what they did this year in getting through some challenges.
They haven't watched the Oilers enough because this is a resilient group.
Yeah. Are you surprised at how many people are writing them off?
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how quickly the bandwagon has been emptied. But if you look at the way this team has played all season long, when they have had adversity, they have found ways to change it and to take advantage of certain scenarios that allow them to come back. I think they're a much more mature team. Hard to imagine after what we saw in the third period of Game 3, but they're a more mature team. I suspect these last 48 hours will be something where Chris Knobloch is going to regain some composure for his hockey club. And I expect a much better team to play Game 4 Thursday night for sure.
I feel like McDavid takes control of the series now. Like not necessarily point production, but just with his group. The way we saw last year in the video, like, let's go.
Yeah. The history of this team is they play very well games 4-7 in any series they play. It's almost like they're that grade 11 student that has to finish the chemistry assignment and waits 3 weeks and the assignment's due tomorrow and then they cram and then they get an A. And they that's exactly what they do. They do a very good job.
Now, they're going to have to be better because Florida has certainly been the better club in the series.
5-on-5, they've been much better. You know, we're seeing the depth of the Panthers come through. By the way, who are you starting in goal for the
Edmonton? I was going to ask you. I'm disappointed that you went there.
You're the goaler.
Sergei Bobrovsky. I thought about it, and I've come around, and I'm going to go with Bob. And against? At the other end, I don't know whether there's a right or a wrong answer here. But given what he did early in the playoffs, I would go Pickard because he was able to step in. Now, Stuart Skinner's the better goaltender, but you got to change momentum somehow. And Knobloch's not afraid to do it on any stage. Pickard hasn't lost a game yet in which he started. Why not? You've got the luxury. Use it.
I would have told you after the game it should be Skinner. The closer we get to game time, I'm leaning more and more to Pickard. Mm-hmm. So it would not surprise me to see Calvin Pickard play game four.
And Stu has shown that he needs a reset at times. So,
those goals that he was in for, I mean, I didn't like the first one, but at the same time, you know, he had five Oilers around him trying to help him, and they couldn't find the puck either.
Yeah, I didn't like the first one either. The others were great plays. Great play.
Sure, they were.
But you need a save. You need to find.
And the other
it's
problem.
Unfair. There, it's unfair, but you need a save.
And I know you know this. Some goalies look bad on breakaways, no matter what. Some goalies look bad on breakaways. Stuart Skinner looks bad on breakaways.
Well, he's just having trouble with them.
That makes he looks bad, yes.
A lot of trouble. Yeah.
Yeah.
They have been terrible goals, but some good moves.
Yeah.
I wonder how much the players have influence on what they're going to do in goal in those conversations. Like, do you think we need a change? I would anticipate.
I suspect that
there's
Knobloch
bouncing
asks one
ideas.
Player.
Yeah.
I suspect they ask one player. Yeah.
Okay. We'll ask Darren Dreger about the Stanley Cup final as we continue and get into what's happening free agency-wise with a couple of different clubs. It's 100% Hockey coming up with our good buddy Gus on 100%
Who's
Hockey.
Gus?
With Larder
I thought Darren Dreger was on the show.
Dreger is, his nickname's Gus from an uncle of his.
It is?
It is. I'm probably not allowed to use that with him, though, because that's a nickname.
Well.
We'll see if I fit it in. Dreger's next. Stay with us.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Back rolling with today's guest on 100% Hockey with Millard and Shannon. Here is TSN's Darren Dreger. What do you think of my beard?
Yeah, it's something, man. I mean, I'll admire how full it is. I mean, you clearly go out of your way on a day-by-day basis to keep it nice and thin and cropped and all of that. But there's a fullness to it. See, and I can't chirp you about it because if I didn't have product in my hair, not dye, let's not go down that path because I've never dyed my hair, but I do put product in there because it would be unruly and it darkens it. So if I didn't do that, my hair would probably be just about as white as your beard is right now.
We've been on for like 8 minutes, and we're getting into grooming tips now. This is fantastic.
Grooming tips from a guy from
TV
Saskatchewan.
Guys, that's what we do.
A guy from Saskatchewan and a guy from Manitoba giving you grooming tips.
Can you imagine if you walked down Brandon with makeup on, what people would say?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Wouldn't be good, John. Wouldn't be good.
What do you think of the final? Any surprises?
No, I mean, surprises, It's a good question. I don't know that there have been surprises. I didn't get caught up, and I think you guys would be the same in the score of game three, nor do I buy the fact that you can just flush a game like that, because the score does matter. But it was more of how Florida found a way to contain the big boys, you know, Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, the physicality of the Florida Panthers, the fact that Edmonton, even though, sure, I mean, there were a bunch of scrums and predictably we saw what happened late in the third period. That's not unusual to the Stanley Cup final. I guess what I was surprised by was, aside from Evander Kane, I didn't see a whole lot of physical game out of the Oilers in game three. You know, they weren't trying to hit on the forecheck. They weren't trying to make things uncomfortable for Bobrovsky or any of those guys. And that, to me, plays right into the hand of the Florida Panthers. And then also, to hear Connor McDavid be as honest as he was post-game, and I thought he was calm, I thought he was composed, but he pulled the curtain back a little bit and saying, we haven't gotten to our best yet in three games of this series. And that's truthful, because maybe they don't win that first game in overtime if things go a little bit differently in the second period, where it was a Florida onslaught. Second period game two wasn't good. So then you get into game three and it comes a bit off the rails. So I'm not sure what to expect on Thursday night in game four, but I think that Florida, maybe we're not talking enough about this. Florida maybe learned some lessons in their experience with Edmonton a year ago and letting them off the mat the way that they did to get to that game seven. Maybe they don't do that if they get into an elimination position this year.
Well, the other thing is that when you look at what the Oilers are, we always talk about the strength down the middle when it's Connor and Leon and perhaps Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, if he's playing center rather than wing.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, strength down the middle with the Florida Panthers, Darren, is spectacular. When you think of who is playing what position, you know, when you look at what Anton Lundell has done, what Barkov has done, they are truly an efficient machine when it comes to checking. That's really, to me, that's the biggest difference, is that they've been able to check and the Oilers are having a difficult time finding their game.
You know, so I'll admit this, you know, because I think that we're so drawn to Bennett and Barkov, that Lundell hasn't received nearly enough credit to this point, right? And maybe from the minute that Brad Marchand was put on that line with Luis Tuurainen and Lundell, it all clicked, because as Marchand has talked about, they play a similar style of game. But if Billy Zito is going to magically create space and find a way to keep Sam Bennett, you know, can he possibly keep both Bennett and Marchand? That seems like a stretch. Then you've got Aaron Ekblad into that mess, as well as a pending unrestricted free agent. But where I'm going with this, you can't keep everybody. But if those guys matter more in the bigger picture of continuing to try and contend for a Stanley Cup on an annual basis, there would be 31 teams trying to get Lundell out of the Florida Panthers. if you're interested in moving some bodies, but in saying that, maybe Lundell, fellas, is the plan B. If they can't work out a deal to keep Sam Bennett, like, Lundell can play two center for the Florida Panthers. That's what we've learned to this point of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
By the way, I will be shocked if they don't find a way to keep Bennett.
I really will.
I've been quoted lots of places saying he's only going to play one of two places, but the number one place is Florida.
Yeah.
Let's face it. That's where I assume he wants to play, but that's where they can offer him the best deal.
Yeah. And, you know, with all due respect to the commissioner and those who say that.
Here comes the tax comment.
Well, yeah, of course it factors in. And we can all appreciate what Bettman was saying, right? You know, it's one of the many factors that a player considers, especially if you're a man who's got a young family. Location matters. There are lots of different contributing factors. I get all that. But Billy Zito, let's say he puts 8x8 on the table for Sam Bennett at $64 million, right? So for Bennett to get that in taxation dollars, he's going to have to get $10 million on a seven-year deal outside of the market. And that's plausible. I mean, there are teams out there that love the way Sam Bennett plays. Why wouldn't you? And they see him potentially as a $10 million player. But if you're comparing apples to apples and you're Sam Bennett and you can get that same dollar or close to it, you don't have to uproot your family. And you know that given management and coaching and how aggressive they are from the owner down, you've got a chance to win every single year, which is cyclical. It's going to change eventually for the Florida Panthers, but I'm with you, John. I wouldn't be shocked, but I'd be surprised if he's playing somewhere else.
There's been zero state taxes teams all over the league for a long time. Why is it such a noticeable and talked
about
conversation?
Nobody's clamoring about going to Nashville, by the way. And Seattle.
Or complaining about Nashville.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I mean, nobody's suggesting. And Gary, the one thing Gary's right about is that, you know, when Florida and Tampa were at the bottom of the barrel, nobody was saying, well, you know what? They're signing players because the tax situation was that way.
That's right. Yeah.
It is all cyclical. And there's no owner. I mean, if Vinny Viola said, if he has such an advantage, I will trade my team, my franchise, for the New York Rangers, the Detroit Red Wings, the Toronto Police. Yeah. Not going to happen.
Montreal has the highest tax, right?
But then the flip side to all of that is if you're Mark Chipman, a member of the executive committee of the National Hockey League, and you're looking at what you have to do to jump through hoops, and I don't remember a player the Winnipeg Jets underpaid as a free agent to try and get to come to Winnipeg. I mean, I can't remember who told me this, but it would be a very small percentage of players in the National Hockey League who have the luxury of a no trade clause that don't have the Winnipeg Jets, the city of Winnipeg, on their list of no trades. Okay. So then you drift that into free agency. I mean, the Jets just won the President's Trophy. They're a contending team basically every year and have been for a long time. So in that regard, there's a couple of factors, taxes being one, the small market being another, all of that. So there are differing scenarios, of course, that go into play, not just the sunshine.
Now that you bring that up, are you concerned about the future of the Jets?
I wouldn't say concerned because, you know, I'm more most interested and John, you like to get in the weeds on the business side of things too when it comes to the collective bargaining agreement. I can't wait to see the inner workings of what revenue sharing is looking like because it's going to be different than what has existed to this point. Small market teams like Winnipeg are counting on that. Mm-hmm. And how does that happen? Because to this point, the messaging has been, well, it's going to come off the backs of the other owners across the National Hockey League and not from the share of the National Hockey League players and the players in general. So, you know, that's what teams like Winnipeg are counting on. And if that doesn't come to fruition, then sure. Yeah, there's a real problem there because, you know, as much as it is about the community support isn't Joe Hockey Fan, you know, marching in and buying a last minute ticket and filling the building. I mean, that's a must. I mean, they need sellouts. That's what they need. Mm-hmm. It's about the corporate sector of rural Canada, Western Canada, finding a way to jump on board. And those are the dollars that Mark Chipman and his executive group in Winnipeg work hard to earn.
Yeah, I don't mind saying I have a concern in Winnipeg because, you know, they had 9 sellouts this year.
Yeah.
9. And it's a great fan base. You guys have, you know, worked there. I still do a lot of work there. I think that there's a lot of positives, but when you think of that, how good that team was this year,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't able to translate that into more than 9 sellouts, that's a problem.
It is.
Really is a problem. And I'm not trying to create havoc in Manitoba.
No.
But people should be aware of that.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be walking on eggshells. We need the Winnipeg Jets to be good. Players like playing there.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people have to go to the arena. And you're right. The corporate sector, which is not a big corporate sector in Winnipeg.
No.
The corporate sector has to participate more.
Yeah. And if there is an amped up revenue sharing, then those three things spell the long-term survival and perhaps a thriving environment for the Winnipeg Jets. But if two of those three things don't click, well, then I think your point is well made and it's fair, John.
Well, and Darren, what if they aren't a good team?
Yeah.
You know, that's it's, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff done a hell of a job there maintaining a certain level. But what happens in the cycle when the team isn't very good?
Because
that will happen.
Yeah.
And that has to be a concern for lots of people.
Yeah. Well, every year it's a battle, right? If we bring it back into the world of hockey ops, and Winnipeg isn't necessarily unique to this, but let's just use the Brock Nelson decision at the trade deadline. You know, Cheveldayoff worked with Lou into the wee hours leading up to the trade deadline. And his understanding was that Brock Nelson would come to Winnipeg, even though Winnipeg was on Brock's no-fly zone initially. But ultimately it came down to, okay, well, I would, but I'd prefer to go to Colorado. So if you can get that deal done with Colorado, then I'll go to Colorado. And late night prior to deadline day, you know, Cheveldayoff goes from being very hopeful that he's getting the number two center that he wanted and needed to not getting him. And now, okay, well, we got to shift gears. And, you know, now you look at Brandon Tanev and Luke Shen and you plug other holes. But that, in part, is a bigger part of not just the business side of things challenging Mark Chipman and management of the Winnipeg Jets, but the hockey side as well.
Just jump in on this a little bit. The fact that we're worried about a team in the future is a pretty good statement on the health of the league right now.
Mm-hmm. Like,
there's no real franchises in any dire straits, are there?
No, I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, there are certain teams that have some challenges, right?
Yeah.
And look, you know, you guys have been to the board meetings before, and this stuff doesn't often get reported on, but almost every single board meeting, you see some sort of transactional shift, right? Where minority owners are moving the dollars, or they're attaching some of the percentages of what they own in the NHL to a son, a daughter, maybe another limited corporation they own, all of those things. But, you know, I kind of poked fun at Gary, you know, a couple of minutes ago and bringing up the whole taxation thing. But the one thing that you cannot argue is the work that Bettman and company have done to get to this place, you know, where basically every team and the new owners that they've brought in are good people. And you know, I think of Ryan Smith and what's going to happen in the future in Utah. Who knows? But it's going to be good. It's going to be fun to watch because you've got a guy that's super motivated, creative, and is going to sit at that board table and be respectful of all the men who have been there for decades. But he's going to put his hand in the air and go, Commissioner, I've got an idea. Mm-hmm. What do you think of this? And do we need more of that? And there's more of it now with Michael Andlauer, and go down the list of some of this new blood ownership coming into the league. And the financial side of things, I think, for the most part, is in pretty good shape.
You know, the fascination is there's a lot of money all over the world wanting to invest in professional sports, particularly North American sports.
Agreed.
And so we're gonna hear a lot more, whether it's, you know, whether it's Persian Gulf money.
Oh, yeah.
But there is going to be a ton more money invested in minority ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So that the guy that's been at the lead of this is Ted Leonsis.
Yeah.
Ted's ahead of the curve. If you read anything that he has said of what the future is going to bring, that you have to be bullish
mm-hmm.
on owning an NHL team because it's not over the top. It's not $7 billion.
Right.
But you can get some minority ownership. I'm going to be fascinated when the dust settles in Toronto is where the ownership stake is going to be, because it would not surprise me within 3 years that Rogers only owns 51% of the team.
Mm.
That way they can get all their money. They can get minority ownership from all over the world. And in the end, they still control it, but they will have a lot of cash flow in order to pay for lots of other things.
Sounds like so you're fronting something, aren't you, John? This is right in your wheelhouse, right? With all of your international and worldly contacts.
Yeah,
I can right. I can see this is going to be the next chapter of the growing
unless
encyclopedia.
Unless these investors are
going to
sponsor your podcast, the answer is.
Don't you have like a back trimmer or something? Like what do they call the back shaver or whatever?
Back scratcher?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Not the back shaver. At our age, we need the scratcher. That's true. Yeah.
Definitely.
We'll be you're pretty funny on a podcast. How come you're not this funny on TSN? This is good.
Well, because I don't know if you remember this. I'm going to share a story, and I've told it before, maybe not publicly, just internally. So you were working, I believe, with the league at the time, and it was during one of those many hallway gatherings or whatever during a negotiating session, the collective bargaining agreement and whatnot. And it was my early days at TSN, and John comes over to me, Darren, and he goes, "Can I tell you something?" And I'm like, "Sure, John, go ahead." He goes, "I don't think insiders should be on panels. I don't want to hear what you have to say on a panel." And then about 2 years later, there's John Shannon sitting on a panel at Sportsnet.
Did you send him a text?
I still maintain some consistency to this. I don't think insiders should be on panels analyzing hockey.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not going to dig deep into F1 in deep, but no, you know, no. I think we all have roles to play and we all have stories to tell, but I don't know what it was like, nor do you, what it was like in a dressing room, nor do I know what the strategy of the coach or the players is. And that's what I've always maintained. Yeah. That's what I've always maintained.
And you know what? I 100% agree with you. And that's why when I'm sitting in our viewing lounge and I'm watching any game, in this case, the Stanley Cup Final, I'm praying for goalie interference or some sort of controversy so that, okay, Dregs, let's start with you. What happened here? And what do you think the league is thinking about when they're making that determination? Because that's my wheelhouse, man. Stay in it. And then Noodles can take us into what the goalie is thinking, and Frankie Corrado or Cheryl Pounder can take us into the X's and O's.
That's funny. Because all those nights in the green room, something would happen at the league level or something, and McLean would turn to me and say, "Well, you phoned somebody. You phoned some, because I'm not phoning anybody."
So, Be useful.
That's
exactly.
Right.
It should be noted that Dreger has been in rooms and is the biggest chirper or very effective chirper inside a room.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, hold on.
He can bring it in the chirping
show
game.
And tell. We got show and tell now.
Well, I know Darren has seen this. Can you see it, John?
Oh, yeah.
So it's you, Nick, and Darren, and you, huh?
Yeah. Look at that.
Wow.
Formidable. I don't remember what charity event that was. That's going way, way, way back there.
But that was a Kerry Goulet game in.
Was it?
Oh, your way.
I don't know. All I remember from that game was, and again, not to take us into a completely different conversation, but anyone who criticizes any player who spent a minute in the National Hockey League should just stop talking if you haven't been there. Because I remember playing in that game and thinking, because my role was just a hit Kipper, like just hit Kipper up the middle with a pass and let him go. And I mean, it was incredible how good a hockey player Nick was and probably still is. I'm like, oh, I mean, I'm giving it everything I've got, and I'm not even close to being able to keep up with him.
Effortless. And he does still skate with Lindros and the boys, North Toronto Arena. We'll be back with more after this break on 100% Hockey with Millard, Shannon, and Dreger.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I want to circle back. You guys brought up Bennett. What's the value? What are we looking at from a AAV extreme here, low to high?
Well, low to high would probably, if you want to start low, it's probably, you know, him staying in Florida at around $8 million, you know, around, be it slightly under, slightly over. I don't know. I'm just looking at the cap of the Florida Panthers and wondering how Bill Zito is going to make it all work. And, you know, I don't think he can. But Ken Hitchcock once reminded me of a saying that stuck with me with certain players. To be the best player on your team, and I would argue that Sam Bennett right now is the best player for the Florida Panthers, which is saying a lot. I mean, Bobrovsky's pretty damn good. You know, Sasha Barkov, go down the list of all the real good players that the Florida Panthers have. But Hitch would call that player the head of the snake. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to have success against the team, you got to find a way to cut off the head of the snake. Well, so far, to this point in the Stanley Cup final, no team has been able to do that with Sam Bennett. So how do you value that? Again, low end for me is around $8 million if he stays. And high end is on a seven-year term. It's got to be $10 million. And I guarantee you, Darren Ferris is just sitting there going, all right, I'm going to wait until July 1. And if the Florida thing doesn't pan out, then here's what the benchmark is. And it probably has to start at $10 million per.
I ask that because the regular season point total stats are not overwhelming. And
but who cares?
Yeah.
We're not, well, you know, who cares?
That's, where, I mean, that's when you're getting paid.
Yeah, but just make the playoffs and then prove your value. You know, I mean, why do you think trade deadline has become such an important day? Because people think they can find a body to get them to the next level in the playoffs. By the way, we've all heard Ken talk about the head of the snake. I think the Florida Panthers are more like whack-a-mole, because the moment you hit Bennett, somebody else pops up, and it's Brad Marchand's turn, and then it is Lundell's turn, and then it is Barkov's turn, and then it's Forsling's turn, and then it's Ekblad's turn. I mean, they're an amazing group of players that can drag each other through the mud and be difference makers. And if you're the manager and you said, okay, we got to keep Bennett, you want to keep Marchand too, and Brad Marchand is now put a for hire sale around his neck to say, I'm ready to be a difference maker anywhere I go.
Well, how about this? So Chris Johnson threw this out the other day, and I know it's true, but Brad Marchand is looking for a 4-year deal. Let's get into that conversation. Yanni Gord just got a 6-year deal. He's not going to be around. Chris Tanev got a 6. He's not going to be around. So owners and teams, you know, let's call them the rich, but the owners who aren't afraid, they're more in it. They just want to win. You bring in the pieces and I'll worry about the money at the end of it all.
I'll manage the buyout later.
That's the trend that we're seeing now. You're going to see that with John Tavares when they get a deal done with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, you know, maybe Florida can get a bit more creative in that world in trying to get the AAV down on Marchand. But the sense is he wants $8+ million times four.
Wow.
$8+ million times four. Well, again, how does that stick in Florida? But on an open market, for the owner that thinks the way that I've just described, he might get that. He might get that from a team that feels like, okay, we're watching this guy just hammer it home in the Stanley Cup final, and he's the missing piece. He's the ingredient that we need.
He ends up in Toronto, doesn't he?
Marchand?
Yeah.
That's a big ask, man. It's a big one.
It's the exact player they're looking for.
That's the change in the DNA Brad's talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, and he plays the way that Craig Berube wants to play, obviously. It feels like that's, you know, I when I think of the pieces that Toronto is in the market for, of course, they'd love to get in on Sam Bennett. I don't think it's going to happen with Bennett. I don't. I think that he's got some concerns with the market, and not just Toronto. That might be returning to a Canadian market, period. And then we've exhausted the conversation why it makes sense that he stays in Florida. Okay, so if you're willing to take him for sake of conversation off the bingo card, all right, well, you know, Toronto wants these heavier, grittier guys. Okay, well, then there's Brad Marchand. Okay, are you willing to overpay him? If you're not, well, where else are you going? Trent Frederick, well, he's not in the same conversation as those two guys, and he's going to stay in Edmonton. I mean, they've just parked an extension for now because it's the Stanley Cup final. Tanner Janot, yeah, he'd be a nice fit. He'd be a nice piece, but those aren't they don't move the needle, that level of player. Those are the complementary pieces that Berube would like to have access to. It's going to be a challenge, and it's going to be a challenge for Tree Living in the sense of, okay, if we don't land a couple of pieces via free agency, how are we getting those pieces via trade? And, you know, yeah, you've got Easton Cowan, but how, you know, you can't trade all of these young players. And he moved draft picks to add some nice adds to the team at the trade deadline. There's Morgan Riley sort of undercurrent rumblings. Morgan's got a full no move clause in a young family. If he's invested and entrenched in Toronto, good luck. I mean, those no moves don't necessarily carry weight unless they do. And it did with Mitch Marner, and it probably will for Morgan Riley. So now where are you going? It's going to be a big challenge.
Well, it's going to be an unbelievably busy summer for Brad to try to figure out exactly what's going on. What's his relationship with Sam Bennett? Was it skewered with the trade to Florida?
Well, some believe that. You know, you think back to that, guys, the time of Bennett in Calgary, it wasn't a management player issue. It was a coach player issue. I mean, right. Sam Bennett at times wasn't even in the lineup. Like there was nothing that he could do well enough that would move him up into the lineup. And I think even back then, I can recall us all collectively having our individual conversations publicly about how, man, this kid looks like he's a top six player. Why isn't he a top six player in Calgary? And he really wasn't until he ends up in Florida. And, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. So there are some who wonder or believe if Bennett still carries a little bit of an edge that maybe his general manager, Brad Treliving at the time, didn't do more to encourage his coach to utilize him as the asset that he was. Right. And keep in mind too, like, and maybe that kind of supports what I said about Bennett not necessarily loving the idea of returning to a Canadian market, because he was scrutinized in Calgary too. Not unfairly. I'm not saying he was picked on by the media or it was all his fault, but he probably grew tired of having to answer the questions, especially when he was used in a limited role or he was out of the lineup and all of those things. And maybe
and
to some degree
compared
that,
compared to Leon Draisaitl,
agreed,
who was drafted after him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, remember that draft was,
yeah,
they could have had the Draisaitl could have been a Calgary Flame.
Yeah. But I do think there's something to that. I don't know how much, but to that relationship, John, I do think there's something to that.
And that's where the regular season totals and a big contract counter each other. And it's difficult. You got to get to the playoffs to perform. And if you're not performing in the regular season, you guys
hey, the Ducks going to become Rangers West?
Maybe. They're looking that way. You know, as Frank Cervelli reported, they're on ongoing conversations with Chris Kreider. And I'm not sure Kreider initially had. I'm pretty sure that Anaheim was initially on his no trade, but maybe with the coaching change, with Joel coming in, the promises of some of the things that Pat Verbeek intends on doing, the market number one, you know, the fact that he's more or less out of the eye of the probing public and media, maybe that helps Chris Kreider and his family. But I look, given the year plus that he's been through in New York, I think he's just wanting and open to change, but ongoing discussions over the course of today being Wednesday. So I expect something will get done, but there's still some work required there.
You know, that's the advantage of having Jacob Trouba there to say, hey, pretty nice out here, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and another teammate in Ryan Strome.
Yeah.
So they've got a – and with Joel coming in there, there is a new attitude. Leo Carlson's a hell of a young player. Chris Kreider could help Leo Carlson play a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Could be a good mentor.
Yeah, and you wonder about, you know, look, it's pretty obvious that Verbeek wants to be aggressive, right? I mean, whether or not they can flip the switch and turn the corner, as we like to say, you know, that'll play itself out. And what does being aggressive mean? I mean, the Trevor Zegras rumors are always there. There's always something percolating around Zegras. John Gibson, is this finally going to be the offseason where they find him a new home? I mean, the possibilities in Anaheim are endless, but Anaheim is developing into a good story for sure.
There's one head coaching vacancy right now. Dallas Stars have a real open search going on right now. Mm-hmm. But there is this trend of young coaches coming up from within. Is that the obvious path here with Neil Graham?
Yeah, I mean, they've got Graham in the American Hockey League, who's highly regarded. So as soon as Pete DeBoer got gassed, someone reached out to me, non-related to the Dallas Stars, but might have been my good buddy Ray Ferraro, but just acknowledging in his time in that doing the coverage of the Western Conference in between the benches, how he watched Alain Nazardine and said, you know, geez, just his poise, his presence, the way he communicates with players. Like, this guy seems, without knowing a whole lot, he seems like a guy that's real close to being ready. And he's pretty high on the list for Jim Neal. He is. So internally, there's two candidates. Externally, a lot of time for Glenn Gullitson, you know, who's on the bench, of course, with the Edmonton Oilers.
So he would go back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Second tour.
Yeah. I mean, when he was there initially, he took over a tough situation, right? So completely different team. You know, Glenn now has the experience that he didn't have way back then. He's a thinker too. And you guys know Jimmy Neal. He's a beautiful combination of old school hockey, but cerebral too, in knowing that you've got to embrace the thinkers. And Gully fits that. But that's also why the next guy I'm going to mention is somewhat attractive, and that's Jay Woodcroft. You know, Jay Woodcroft is a surprise to me that he hasn't landed a job, and another head coaching job, because everybody that I talk to that interviews Jay Woodcroft is blown away by how great an interview he is. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't get these jobs. So there's something holding him back, but I know he's on Neil's list as well.
Well, he rubbed people the wrong way. And I don't know whether that's a carryover or what, but
it's a bit of smarminess. And I would say that to his face. Like, I mean, there is a little bit of don't tell me what you think. Let's spend the next hour allowing me to tell you what I know. You know, you do get that. You do get that from Jay.
That sounds familiar to this podcast, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish you wouldn't do that. what do you know about Dan Muse?
Oh, not much. I'm not going to lie. I gave Kyle a ton of credit because, oh God, I mean, what we do, I mean, we create our own lists. And of course you run it by sources with every club. You know, you don't want to randomly throw out guys, because at least my experience with doing that, you know, we used to chirp Pierre Maguire about being the finalist all the time, because he'd interview for a job. And then within a day or two, you know, magically or mysteriously, his name would be out there publicly. And it got to a place where it legitimately hurt Pierre. It did. And I use him as an example because it just leaps to mind. But there are others who have been down that road too. Sometimes it's best to not have your name out there when you're a legit potential candidate. And Dan Muse's name didn't cross my desk. It didn't. I didn't know. And where I got a little bit suspicious and had nothing to do with Dan Muse was the day before Pittsburgh announced. I was just going back and forth with Kyle Dubas and asked, okay, well, you know, is the interview process done with? Yep, we're done interviewing. I'm just doing some background checks now. And I said, okay, so you're down to 2-3 guys? Nope. Down to five.
Five?
And five. I'm like, hold on a minute here. Like, okay, so DJ Smith, who else? David Quinn was in there initially. Mitch Love. Yeah, I mean, go down the list of all the guys. And I couldn't get it to five. And then, of course, he dried up on me. He wouldn't answer. But clearly, Dan Muse was one of the finalists. And the next day, they announced that he'd been hired head coach. So in answer to your question, John, I do not know a whole lot about Dan Muse, but we know Kyle Dubas, and he would not have left any stone unturned. So the fact that they're taking a chance on this guy means he's a good hockey man.
Well, I also think that, you know, the timing in Pittsburgh is right to bring a new, fresh face in to start rebuilding the foundation, because that's exactly what Kyle's doing now, even though they have a lot of these veteran players. And 3 years from now, if you had a big name coach in Pittsburgh, you know, and you're thinking, okay, we need somebody to get us over the hump because we're not getting over the hump, it's going to be easier to get rid of Dan Muse than it would be Peter Laviolette.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's not a knock at Dan Muse. That's just the way the cycle of coaches works in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
So
and maybe it's
I had some friends that work in the Ranger organization. I said, "What can you tell me about Dan Muse?" And they said, "We don't know. We never spoke to him."
That's not allowed here. You can't do that. You're not the only organization that plays by that rule.
By the way, on the Jay Woodcroft thing, I think Jay would, and you tweaked me to it. I think what Jay has to do is do what DJ did.
Yes.
You have to go back and be an assistant.
Yeah.
You have to go back and what Gullitson has done.
Yes.
You have to go back and reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
And if you think that you are at the top of the pecking order, you will never, ever get that opportunity easily. You better be prepared to go back into the trenches, prove yourself again, and then open up your opportunities to be a head coach at a later date.
Yeah. As I mean, it worked for Lane Lambert.
Yeah. Sure it did.
As we
worked for everybody. It worked for Dave Hakstol. It works for all these guys. Yes.
I agree.
What you got the draft and then free agency. Do you think there's going to be some movement in that first round?
Yeah, I do.
Sounds like it, right?
Yeah, I think the potential for the draft to be borderline wild trade-wise is 100% there. And we got a taste of that last year in the Sphere. And I, you know, now you have to embrace the theater of the event, and that's what it was. But I think teams did. I think teams went in there and went, all right, well, if we're going to do something, you know, let's stop talking about it and let's get it done, because the world is watching. You won't have that to the same degree because it's decentralized in Los Angeles, but that's not going to stop the business side of things from a hockey ops perspective. So there's a lot of money that needs to get moved. We know the salary cap is going up, but, you know, if you're talking about, and we're talking about Toronto, we're talking about Vegas, you know, the Dallas Stars aren't leaving their roster untouched. They fired a coach.
And they're tight too.
Yeah. Like there's so many. Well, and look at Edmonton and Florida when the Stanley Cup final ends. You know, if Edmonton loses, is Stan going to be willing to stand pat with everything that he has and you know, do some tweaks with extensions and all? No, he's not going to do that. And so you have some flexibility with money, and that flexibility can be kicked into gear at the draft. So, yeah, it's going to be busy.
You have a gut feeling on Marner?
What's that?
You have a gut feeling on Marner?
Where he ends up?
Yeah. I've heard everything from Tampa to Vegas and teams in between.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of that makes sense, right? Yeah. There's an outlier in this, and people keep hinting at it. And that's Utah. That would surprise me, but it wouldn't blow my socks off that happens. You know, just it depends on the sales pitch. It depends on the opportunity. It depends on the money. A lot of things. You know this better than all of us, Darren. The Vegas Golden Knights are going to find a way to be better. They're going to find a way. And, you know, the one thing that I've always admired, and it starts with Bill Foley, is the motto of just do what it takes to win. And by win a Stanley Cup. Yeah. So there would be disappointment this year. Yeah, they lost to a good team. Get that. How do we make it better? And it's never personal. It's always related. The decisions are never personal, despite what we've experienced in the past. It's always about winning. So I think Marner would love to end up in Vegas. Absolutely love it. Whether or not Vegas can make it work, we'll find out. But I wouldn't bet against them.
Was waiting, thinking John.
You're not going to respond to that. You're not going to respond to that.
I
think Vegas will be looking at Marner. They look at everybody, and we've heard the reports about being in on Marner earlier in this season, whether it's trade deadline or before that. So,
two teams jump out at me though. I wonder what Kyle will do. We talked about Kyle Dubas. Will Pittsburgh, are they going to be in a position to be able to move money around to find a way to make it work? And the other one is, and you're going to laugh at me, is Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Don Waddell, after what they went through last year and how they made a good story out of a horrific incident, you know, they think they're on the verge of some doing something special in Columbus.
Yeah.
And they have lots of money. Lots of money. And you have to wonder if Don Waddell's prepared to do something with that situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, we can try and pinpoint the team. Really, really, really hard to do when you're talking about the players of interest and you're looking at a Bennett if he's available, Mitch Marner. You know, the coveted list of unrestricted free agents, because the market is vast. It's not five teams, it's 30. Like, I mean, you know, and some of those aren't going to be contenders or players just based on the want of the player, but that doesn't mean that they're not keenly interested and going to make their pitch. And as soon as you said Columbus, I kind of raised my eyebrows because it makes sense. It makes sense.
We haven't talked Nick Ehlers as a free agent.
I
still see him back in Winnipeg, but you know, he's going to obviously test the waters, right?
Yeah, I do too, John. You know, Nick is an interesting cat. He really is. And it's not like when you leave the arena in Winnipeg, you're flooded with autograph seekers and all of that. I mean, it's a Canadian market, so of course you're recognizable. My sense is that he wants to go to a place where he just leaves the rink and goes home. You know, and he's a personable guy. He really, truly is. So what does that look like? You know, I look at the Carolina Hurricanes, and I can envision having Nick Ehlers in that lineup. You know, the way that he can skate, how, you know, shrewd he is defensively, all of those things. And Carolina wants to spend, right? They want to spend some money. So Winnipeg's going to try hard, though, because he's just such an important part of the dressing room, number one, and then the community, and he's a good player. So they're going to do everything they can, but that might not be good enough.
I was telling people the other day about the Timo Seleni and Osaka, Japan story that one of our announcers used to say. He used to say them different, Seleni and Osaka. Osaka. And Drager went, stop saying that that way. tune in one of the announcers face to face. Well, that's the way they say it in Japan. We're not in Japan.
I'll tell you who it was. Was it Damien Goddard?
Yes. Yes,
there
it was.
There you go, buddy.
Yeah. that's impressive.
Yeah.
Just the sway that Drager had in our room, in our dress room. little Messier in there.
So I'm going to let – I know we got to go, but we did talk about Kreider.
We have all the time in the world.
Well, we talked about Kreider and Anaheim earlier, and I wasn't sure. So just timely being what it is, Kreider does have to waive to go to Anaheim. I suspected he did. I wasn't sure that Anaheim was on the no trade list, but so that's part of the ongoing discussion.
Jacob Trouba has probably texted him from every hole he plays on the golf course in Southern California, saying, "This is pretty nice out here."
The wives would be going back and forth for sure. Yeah, there's taxes in California.
Okay, there's state tax in New York too. Trust
me. There is.
The difference between New York and California is not that much.
Yeah, fair.
Your golf game any good?
No. I've only played once, legitimately. I played once at Royal Ashburn out here.
Right.
I think that was 87, which isn't bad for the first round of the year.
No.
I like to keep it in the low 80s, but I was kind of all over the place. And then we've got a nice little 12-hole golf course here out my way. 12 holes. It's a par
three. That's the perfect number.
Perfect, man. You scrape around there in like 90 minutes, 2 hours if it's a bit slow. Real tough holes. It's par three. The longest hole is like 230, something like it, maybe 240. But that's it. That's all I've played.
Wow.
You know.
What about you, Darren Millard?
I play every second day.
Yes,
my
I
good.
Know. That's now we all want to work in Vegas.
Are you still hitting it left-handed, or did you go back to right-handed because somebody told you need to change?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Jelana was my coach. Switched me from left-handed to right-handed. And all my left-handed friends loved it because they got free clubs.
So 2 years ago, and yeah. I can appreciate and feel for you in that. 2 years ago, I was playing with, maybe 3 years ago, a real good player out here, Mackenzie Tout is his name. And I was putting so bad. Like, I had the yips. Like, I would miss the hole from 10 feet by 3 feet wide. Like, it was awful. And we played about 12 holes. And finally he goes, Driggs, I'm going to give you some advice. He goes, go to Play It Again Sports and buy a left-handed putter. You got to start putting left-handed. And I did that for 2 years. I really? Putted left-handed, but cross-handed left-hand. So my right hand was the leading hand putting left-handed and cleaned it right up. Cleaned it right up.
Okay, now you're still putting left-handed?
No, I went back to right-handed, but it whatever mental block I had, that 18 months or whatever it was just enough time to get rid of it.
Okay.
I still don't hit it as far as I did left-handed, but I hit it straighter. Gus, thanks for doing this. Are you going to the draft? Or are you going to do it?
No, we'll be doing it. We don't travel much anymore. Although I am going to Edmonton for 5 and then Florida 6 and back to Edmonton for 7. But traveling to the draft.
You're going for 5 from Toronto, though, so that's better. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys, if I don't see you again, have a great summer.
You too.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender, juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
I like that interaction about him being loose and showing the personality there. He does have a great personality.
He gets very official on the desk.
Yeah.
Very official. The National Hockey League.
It's unusual that you want to see more personality. Usually you're the one that's saying, hey, tone it down. And this is an interesting side of your assessment of announcers.
I think that's the difference between podcast and broadcast. I really do. I think there's a huge difference.
Because if showed the personality on the panel, TSN panel, would you be saying, hey?
The problem on air, first of all, you know you're limited for time. Time's such a factor in anything that we do on broadcast. You know, 3 minutes is 3 minutes. I mean, we have answers on this show that are 4.5 sometimes.
Yeah.
But we have a whole segment on broadcast that's 3 minutes. So you better be efficient with your time and you better be efficient with your words. That's the biggest difference between the two. That's why I think podcasts have become so successful, is that there are fewer rules. So the question then, if you try to be funny on broadcast, it better be so quick and so efficient that I don't think people will understand it.
And because you can't follow up on it and dig into it because you run out of time for the rest of this stuff.
Right. And so the question becomes is, okay, I have 30 seconds. Do I want to be funny or do I want to be informative? Because in the end, the funny may be the right thing, but you have such a good story to tell in 30 seconds that's important to the 3 minutes, then you can't afford to be funny. And that's a real challenge. It's the difference between the two mediums.
I come to that fork in the road all the time. So which one should I be choosing? Funny or informative?
Well, as I've told you many times, if you were that funny, you'd live in Vegas. By the way, you live in Vegas.
Marner, give me the team that you think he ends up with?
Vegas.
You do?
Yeah. He at the deadline, they said he would go to Vegas. He wants to go to Vegas.
They don't miss out on many fish.
No, but this one is going to have to, you know, they might need David Copperfield for a little bit of Vegas magic in order to fit this one under the cap.
They've always found a way.
Or not.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know who they've played with and or looked at and
well,
and
no, they just, I mean, it just so happens that somebody's hurt and they don't fit under the cap.
Oh, don't start that.
Well, it's true. That's a reality that 10 teams are playing with. Right?
Yeah.
10 teams. Both of the teams in the Stanley Cup final are in the same boat.
Ekblad's an interesting one. The Stanley Cup final, when they picked up Seth Jones, it did, to me, set up the dominoes that Ekblad would play elsewhere next year.
Yes, and he's already making public statements that he'll almost do anything to stay.
Not a great negotiating tactic.
No, but how much money in the end do you need? How much is enough?
We spent 6 minutes on state tax. So
no, you did.
So that's don't get me into the how much money do you possibly need? What do we got going on to end the week on Friday?
Secret.
Ooh, I like your secrets. That means we got something fun going on. If you're not willing to really,
I don't know if it's fun, but I think it'll be informative.
Yeah. I think it'll be going to be a good guest. Thanks, John. Keep me up to date with that Rolodex, what you're working on. Okay, buddy?
Yeah, and everybody else who's under the age of 30, Google the word Rolodex.
It's in your contacts.
There you go. There you go.
Bye, John.
Cheers.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.